I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello. My name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by banging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello and welcome to episode 146 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Today I'm taking you to meet Mark Beattie. But before I do, a big thank you to our Patreon supporters, without whom we would not be able to make this podcast. Since day one, this podcast has been self-funded, so we didn't have to bow to the advertisers. But in order for us to keep going and to grow, we started a Patreon page, where you can donate from as little as £3 a month, which is about the same price as a cup of coffee. So if you like what you hear and you'd like to support us, just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile page and you'll see a Linktree drop-down box. And then just follow the link. It'll only take a few moments. But if you're not able to do that, that's just fine. This content is free for everyone. And speaking of podcasts, this week I featured on an art podcast that's based in Australia called Art Wank. Yep, Art Wank. It's run by two British artists who moved over to Australia a couple of decades ago, and that is Fiona Verity and Julia Nicholson. We did record it some time ago with the intention of both talking about each other's podcasts and putting them out at the same time. Well, I'm quite well known for wanting to rabbit on, as you'll be well aware, but my God, did I meet my match with these two ladies. And I was getting it in stereo. I couldn't ask a question for the life of me. So it pretty much ended with them interviewing me. I'm going to be chatting with them again. And this week, I'm going to be asking the questions. So go over to the socials, give them a follow. And wherever you listen to your podcast, go and subscribe. They speak to artists all across Australia and a few elsewhere. Well, last weekend saw the opening of Fort Stavry's The Factory Project over in Silvertown, E16. And my God, what a show it's turned out to be. I show with the Skip Gallery and the Ministry of Arts are showing with Gallery number 32. Both artworks went down amazingly well. I spoke about the artwork made with the Skip Gallery, Domestic Waste, on the last Thorpe Stavry episode. And I'll be speaking about the artwork made with Gallery number 32, which was called Lost Connections, on the next Thorpe Stavry episode, which will be coming out in a few days. As well as the artwork on display, the Factory Projects have got several performances, workshops and talks, a list of which can be found over on Thorpe Stavry's website, one of which is called The Lives of Others with Rosalind Davis and myself, Gary Mansfield. It's on Thursday the 21st of October between 1500 and 1630, 3 o'clock and 4:30 to me and you. And what you can expect is a South London girl and an East London boy talk about how they ended up being artists and their art career journey so far, including joys, inspirations, life-changing moments, relationships, and a few challenges along the way. For these free tickets, go over to the Instagram profile page of Rosalind Davis, and you'll find them there on her Linktree drop-down box. Likewise, they will also appear on mine very shortly, but you can also follow the link in the show notes of this podcast. That's The Lives of Others with Rosalind Davis and myself, Gary Mansfield, a talk happening at the Factory Project, London E16. But finally, to today's guest, after that super long introduction, is Mr. Mark Beattie. I first had the pleasure of meeting Mark, albeit virtually, about 18 months ago, when we was both taking part in the V Art Show, which was the first virtual art fair. Now they're all doing it, right? Mark's a commercial sculptor that shows at mainly art fairs, and a lot of the time alongside his mum. How cool is that? And even as this podcast is released, Mark will be showing at the Star Art Fair, which is at the Saatchi Gallery in London, between the 13th and 17th of October. So if you're in London, it's an absolute must. Well, I'm not going to hold you up any longer, so please, come with me over on Zoom to meet Mark Beattie. Anyway, let's have a little chat about you.
Yeah, nice one.
Right, Mark, as you're aware, I've got 7 questions I ask each artist.
Yeah.
The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
So I create abstract sculptures, abstract sculptures. So I use a range of materials, copper, aluminium, steel. It really depends on the scale that I'm working at. So I'll make abstract sculptures that are 10 centimeters right up to 3.5 meters. And I kind of use the metal that lends itself to that scale. So if you're making a 3.5 meter sculpture, you can't make it out of copper because you wouldn't be able to move it anywhere.
No.
So that way, you know, if I'm making something for the garden, it would be made out of aluminium. Whereas the work that I make in the studio here, because it's much smaller, are kind of more interior works, and they're made out of copper. It's just such a easy material to manipulate by hand. And you can heat it up and get really tight curls and add movement to the metal, which is something that I'm really interested in as well. And I guess recently, well, not so recently, but the last 5 years, I added neon to the work.
They're pretty cool.
And that was kind of, it was a big change for me, and it was something that I was quite nervous about doing. It took kind of 18 months to experiment and get it right. I didn't want people to think, you know, you're just adding neon in there because Tracy Evans uses neon.
You can, yeah.
So I really wanted it to complement the work and add to the movement and the energy of the pieces. And really, for me, since adding the neon, it kind of took me to another level. Suddenly people that weren't necessarily interested were interested, and architects and interior designers started commissioning pieces, which was really exciting.
The neon is generally in amongst the tubular metalwork, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when the neon is off, it does look like part of the metalwork you've got there.
And I have people coming up to the work that hasn't got any neon at an art fair, and they'll start kind of tapping it going, does this switch on? And you go, no, that's a standard sculpture. Yeah. It's kind of just for your garden. And that's what I really wanted to do with the neon. I wanted to kind of hide all of the wires, hide all of the transformers and the ugly parts that, you know, when you see neon on the wall and there's wires going down, I wanted to hide all of
the illusion, doesn't it?
In the tube. Yeah. And to have, you know, neon in 3D in the round. Obviously I'm a sculptor, so I work in the round anyway. So to allow the viewer to walk round the piece and not see any wires, that it's just suspended in the space, adds something quite magical, I think. And I think, you know, to reinforce it, when the neon's off, it's still an aesthetic sculpture. It becomes a kind of statement piece or mood lighting for someone's house once the neon's on, and you can kind of dim it as well.
When was your first interest in art? Did you always have it in and around the home?
Yeah, always. So my mum is an artist, and she was an art teacher for 40 years. So she taught at a secondary school. So I was really lucky, you know, growing up, we would do art on Friday. So Friday evenings, my dad would take my brother out to karate and me and mum would stay in, and I was a bit younger. And yeah, it was just so special to kind of sit there. That was, you know, the only time we'd really argue, because I was such a perfectionist. I'd be drawing something and my mum would go, could I just make a suggestion? And then that would be it. You know, all my pencils would go up in the air. And so it's always been in the house, and it's been, you know, it's great now because I'm exhibiting with my mum as well. When we do the other art fair, we kind of take stands next to each other. So that's really good. But I've always been encouraged, you know, and to have creativity in the house. And, you know, now my brother's got a daughter, so I've got a 5-year-old niece, and it's kind of passing on that creativity to the next generation, which is really, yeah, really cool.
So at what point did you realise that you wanted to be an artist?
It's the funny one. I think I obviously studied art at GCSE, and then you kind of roll on and, you know, you realise you enjoy it and you study at A-level. And then it was kind of, you know, I was encouraged at home to continue and went on to study at Leeds Uni. But really, it was in the second year of Leeds Uni. They offered, it was an Erasmus where you could go and study abroad for a year. Wow. So I decided to go and study in Australia. So I spent a year in Australia and managed to blag my way into the sculpture school in Canberra. It's Australian National Uni. And I had no experience really making sculptures. The facilities in Leeds were kind of, you can do a bit of clay here, you can do this, but no welding or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then I managed to get into the sculpture school and convinced Wendy, her name was, the lecturer. And that really changed a lot for me, because you'd be working alongside Australian artists that were selling their work for a living. You know, these lecturers were at the top of the game in Australia, and you'd be, you know, learning how to do some welding, and they'd just come over and go, no, don't do that. Like, do it like this. Yeah. And then you look over there and they're making these monumental, like, you know, why do I even bother?
You're tapping away with a little bit of solder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you're looking up at this 3-meter piece and you think, wow, like what?
Yeah.
What a legend. So yeah, for me, and because I couldn't take anything home, you know, I was on the other side of the world. So they just kept encouraging me to be ambitious and make large, they've got so much space over there, make large sculpture. Don't worry about it. You can't take it home with you. So yeah, metalwork and bronze casting and things like that. I just had a great year of playing with different materials and teaching myself different skills and just having fun, really.
The work you do now, when did this style, if you like, come about?
So actually it developed in Australia. Wendy, the lecturer, actually said to me, you know, why are you making sculpture? What is the story behind your work? And obviously at that point I was on the other side of the world, so it made sense to start making globes. Since then it's kind of moved on to adding energy into the metal, manipulating the material, so it doesn't look like metal. It looks, you know, people come up to it and think it's rubber or...
Yeah, definitely. It's got a sort of fluidity to it, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And to take an industrial material like steel or like copper and add movement into it, that's kind of the beauty of it, really. And that's the challenge. And using neon as an addition to that as well, it was really great to kind of bring glass and metal together, which really shouldn't mix. That fragile material contrasting against the metal and the industrial material, bringing them together. Yes, occasionally it goes wrong when I'm putting it together, but you learn from that and you kind of make sure that the copper tubes are lined up the right way so they accept the neon. It's great, and you know, I'm incredibly lucky that 10 years after uni I'm still making and still exhibiting.
Nice. Well, because of the abstract shape of your work, when the viewer moves around it, it sort of moves and dances on its own, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people kind of see dancers in there. You know, when you see, you were taught how to draw and you'd be drawing or life drawing and you'd have that movement of an arm and you draw with a line. For me, I think, you know, the maquettes that I make are my drawings, you know, the small pieces, the miniatures that I make are kind of me, but drawing in 3D. And then I would look at that and go, okay, and view that from all different angles and go, that form works, start to make a tower and different shapes, but still with the same movement. And then you'd go, okay, that's successful. Let's try and scale that up to a meter or 2 meters.
Which piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, do you reckon?
It's a difficult one. I mean, all of them, it's a funny one that, you know, once you, and you would know, when you make something, you have such an emotional connection to it anyway. But I am a commercial artist and I do, you know, try and sell work. But every time one leaves the studio, you know, it is a piece of you that is leaving. And it's great to see images come back in from clients and see them in situ in someone's home. But I guess the two that really jump out, Global Odyssey was the largest sculpture that I made, and I made that back in 2012, just after my MA.
Oh, nice.
That was 2.5 meters. And just the scale of that, you know, to show that I could do that and add that kind of scale to my portfolio. That was, you know, that was incredibly special. The moment that that sold, you know, you think, wow, I'm not going to see that again. But I'd kind of taken it on tour around the UK. So it was a very big sculpture to put on the back of a van and ship around in the early days of, you know, having, you know, you say yes to everything, don't you? And,
well, I was just about to ask, funnily enough, if it was a touring piece or one that went in situ in a garden or an outside space.
So I was, when I was studying at Kingston, I was doing my MA, and the lecturers there were trying to, you know, push me in a certain direction to explore work. And I kind of, you know, hit a wall with that. And I just wanted to make sculpture. I knew I wanted to make sculpture. So I went off and did my own thing. And I just thought, okay, as a sculptor, you come up with the ideas, but, you know, you want to go big, you know, you want to do the Angel of the North, basically. So I went off and made this Global Odyssey off, you know, my own back, which was a risk because obviously it's expensive. And then for the next 3 years, suddenly I had this 2.5 meter sculpture that, you know, hadn't sold. But it suddenly people were emailing me going, oh, we've got a sculpture park, we'd really like to show it. Or there's an office here that would love to show the sculpture in the atrium for 6 months. And you go out, you put it on the back of a lorry and you install it for 6 weeks or a weekend and hope that that exposure leads to something, a new opportunity or a sale. And thankfully, you know, the piece sold in the end. But just that journey of that sculpture has led to so many different things. You know, the people that you meet at these exhibitions or the art consultants that put it into an atrium. Yeah, fantastic experience. So that's the one really that sticks with me, I guess.
And did that experience of making larger work and being lumbered with it, if you like, did that push you to not go so large?
Yeah, you see, yeah, it's so true. And I hadn't really thought about that, but I made that large piece as a student after I'd just moved to London. And then suddenly you've got a 2.5 meter sculpture and you look around and go, hang on a minute. You know, I'm living in a one bed flat. I haven't got room for something like that. How many other people in London have not got room for a 2.5 meter sculpture? So then I started looking at the miniatures, looking at the wall based pieces and going, this, you know, I can't afford a studio now. I've left higher education. What do? Suddenly I'm making on a desk in my flat. So you start looking at the scale and going, right, I've got to start bringing all this down. And
it's called reality, isn't it?
Yeah. And it sucked. But actually, you know, it all led to different things. And almost going back to the basics of kind of going, okay, this is how you would construct a sculpture at this scale. And it led me to find copper because, you know, the large piece was made out of aluminium and you needed a fabricator to help me construct that because it was so big. But then to go back and go, right, okay, well, I'm just in my bedroom here. Can't afford a studio. What material can I use safely in this flat? And yeah, thankfully found copper and haven't really looked back since. Excellent. It's such a great material to work with.
Well, like you say, the larger one, it's well worth doing because it's a good page in your portfolio, isn't it?
Yeah, and ever since then, you know, the garden sculptures, really, that they're the ones that the garden and the light sculptures are the ones that really excite me. You know, when you get a commission through for a garden piece and, you know, you get the picture through of the garden, you start superimposing the scale of the piece and you think, oh, you know, this could be a 3-meter sculpture here. Nice. And that's, you know, when you're inside the sculpture and it's towering above you, as a sculptor, there's just something that is in your, you know, it's in your blood, and you kind of look and go, this is huge. You know, this sculpture will outlive me.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
It's almost like being inside a tornado, I would have thought, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I made a double helix piece, actually, for a sculpture competition a few years ago. And that was 2 meters, and it had a light running through the centre. And that was great, you know, to be inside that. You've got all the movement running around you. Yeah, it makes it really exciting.
Yeah. Because not all of your sculptures are curved and circular, are they?
No, so I started to develop, this is in the lockdown actually, during the VR show that we did. I was doing a lot more drawing because I was in Nottingham with my parents. So my wife and I left London and, you know, I was away from the studio. So didn't have the materials, didn't have the tools. So I started drawing a lot more, which was, I guess, cathartic and kind of a way of, you know, blocking out the news. And the craziness going on in the world. But yeah, what I noticed was these drawings were, they weren't my nice, calming, spiraling, curvy works. They were kind of more aggressive. And yeah, from that, I developed a series called the Fracture Series, which is, you know, very angular, quite angry, really. But I wanted to keep it kind of light, and so I powder coated those with a really bright colour. So I had an orange, a green. And with an LED light going through the centre. So I wanted to keep those as fun as possible, but kind of channel the drawings that I did in lockdown. And since then, I've kind of started looking at different things now as well. Whereas the Fracture Series was great, and that was kind of a result of the COVID lockdown. But once I realised that the COVID this lockdown's going on for longer than we all anticipated, I started to develop a new series where it was about connections. So I did the Love Knot collaboration with a number of artists. So you're right, yeah, Ken McIntosh. Rod McIntosh, sorry, and Ken Nwabu. And I was kind of, and Roy's people, who I know you know quite well as well. And we were looking at collaborating on pieces, and it was about making that connection between a studio in lockdown and a studio in lockdown. I think from that, it's led to some new pieces that are really exciting. I've started to kind of take that step back and go, why am I making sculpture? I can make these globes with my eyes closed. I can make towers. Yeah. You know, once you've been doing it for 10 years, you kind of go, okay, that's great. That's almost, you know, my signature style. But the lockdown has given me the time to kind of refocus on what I am doing and why I'm doing it. And the importance, you know, of why I'm doing it for myself as opposed to why I'm doing it to sell work. You know, I know sculptures can be aesthetic, but they're also a commitment to someone's house, someone's garden. So for me to kind of, after 10 years, have the lockdown, it almost came at the perfect time, really, for me to reflect on the last 10 years and go, okay, that was great. Where am I going for the next 10 years? It's all about developing the connections with other artists, so lots of collaborations, hopefully, but also the connections within the metal. So I've started producing a Love Knot piece for an exhibition next month and showing the interlacing of materials almost materials hugging one another. And I guess that's because of the connections that we've just not had, for whether it's with, you know, friends, family, for so long now. It's about developing that more kind of emotional side of things, which has made it a lot more exciting for me, I think, because I'm kind of back in and excited to make.
Well, when I did see those angular pieces, it did sort of throw me back a little bit. And when I looked closer, I could still see your mark within them.
Yeah.
But, and you know, I could see that it did have your stamp on it. And now you said that it was made during lockdown. It is almost as if that the works that you make generally are quite relaxed and slow, whereas these other ones are rigid and stood up and paying attention, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a good reflection that they was made during a time when we've all had to sort of sit up and you know, take notice.
What's interesting is since we've come out of the lockdowns and things have eased a little bit, I haven't gone back to making the fracture pieces. I've gone back to making the more relaxed and happy works. I think it was maybe just a moment where things were so, you know, anxiety on top of each other, everyone, and you kind of, it was a moment in time that just was captured with those sculptures.
You think you will go back to it?
Potentially, but I think I'm more exploring the idea of this love knot. And, you know, it's funny, I got married in February 2020, and it was a month before the lockdown. So you go from that extreme of being in the south of France with all your friends, family and wife, and you're just surrounded by love, you know. And I don't want it to sound cheesy, but you are, you know, it's this special day where everyone is there for you. And then a month later, all of those connections are just broken. And you just kind of go, okay, well, shall we do a pub quiz on Zoom or something? And, you know, we were so excited. My wife and I were so excited to travel, you know, and go and see all these people that came out to the south of France for our wedding. And you just weren't allowed. You know, we had people from Australia, Bolivia, America, and you kind of go, oh, as you were saying bye to them, you know, oh, we can't wait. We'll come out and visit you as soon as possible. And then, you know, the shutters come down a month later and you just think, I've gone from such an extreme to you know, isolation almost.
Yeah.
So I'm almost kind of reacting to that with these love knots and the connection pieces. And that's why it was so great to collaborate with artists in lockdown, like Rod and Roy and my mum. And, you know, it was... Again, it was making those conversations, striking up collaborations with other artists, and hopefully that will continue. But within my own work, you know, I'm kind of excited about exploring that a little bit more and manipulating the material to have a bit more meaning behind it. For me, you know, I have people kind of weeping in front of my work.
Nice.
And they see, you know, they see things in it that I don't see, because I try not to kind of put messages onto the work, but people, you know, will look at the white light and it will have religious connotations and things for them. And that's something that I like, you know, I like exploring the idea of color theory. In, you know, you put red neon into a sculpture, it has a very different meaning to a white light. And that's quite fun to play with, but I don't kind of impose my feelings behind the sculpture onto, you know, like we were saying before about the written text next to a piece of work. I like to kind of step back and see what other people see in the pieces.
Well, that's the beautiful thing, isn't it? When you finish an artwork and you put it out there, you put all of your meaning into it, but that as soon as you put it out there, then it takes on a life of its own, and that meaning is for other people to make up then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I mean, you know, just these two women that were crying at the other art fair, I've never had a reaction like that before, but there was something in the work that touched them, and that was really special for me to see. But I didn't, you know, I'm not going to go over there and go, actually, this is, you know, your theory of what's happening.
Wipe those tears away, yeah, woman. Exactly. You're totally wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong. This is why I did it.
Be happy.
Yeah, and with the neon pieces, so I've got a piece in a digestive clinic on Welbeck Street in London, and the person that bought that could see, you know, the intestines and things like that running through the piece.
Yeah,
and I just met him and I went, you know, that's fantastic that that's what you see, but it goes from one extreme to the other, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, suddenly someone can see, you know, the digestive system in the neon within a piece, and it is reception it. And that's,
but that's
great.
The beauty of abstract work, isn't it? Everyone tries to read within the abstract, don't they? To try and make a face or make an image or make something out of a scribble or a set of colours.
Yeah, like there are, you know, there was one client, he could see MB in there and was like, oh, I can see, do you sign all of your pieces like this? And it was like the neon was MB. And I'd never noticed that before until he kind of sent a picture and like drew over it, like, oh, yeah, there it is. And I thought, wow, that's just a complete fluke. But people see different meanings, which is great. It's the back, you know, it's your background that you bring to it. It's your story, you know, your culture, where it is seen. And I think, that's what makes the art world so fantastic. You know, some people would walk in and see a piece of art and hate it straight away. And other people will walk in and it stays with them for the rest of their life. And yeah, it's so powerful, isn't it?
That's what we're all about, is making visual connections, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you do to relax?
Holiday. I'd really like to travel, and even more so at the moment. The last time I was abroad was for the weddings, and that was a long time ago. So I like to kind of get out of the UK and kind of go to the south of France. Just, I actually started running in the first lockdown as well. Did couch to 5K. So I'm training for a half marathon at the moment.
Oh, wow. Well done.
And that's really helped, actually, just to get up early and go for a run. And so I just did 20K this morning, which was the furthest I've ever ran. So I'm absolutely exhausted.
I can imagine.
But yeah, that it's an odd one. Exercise, you know, I get into the studio when I'm really ready to go. So it's not so relaxing, but it's definitely helps with kind of mental health. And holiday, I guess, as well. But, you know, in the lockdown, it was drawing for me. You'll know as well, like you enter this kind of zone where everything on the outside of your little bubble is almost blurry.
Yeah,
And, you know, all the sounds are fuzzed a little bit. And it becomes like a meditative state where you're just drawing and drawing and, you know, 4 or 5 hours have gone by and you're still drawing. That's incredibly relaxing. It's an odd one, isn't it? Because as artists, you know, our work, we love to do our work. I guess when you lead up to an art fair or a show, it's really not relaxing because you've got the deadlines. So at that point, it's time to go.
It's funny how it does take on a different shape, isn't it? In your mind, all of a sudden, what you did find relaxing, exactly the same thing becomes a little bit of pressure, doesn't it?
It's when you cross that line from, okay, I'm making this is fun, I'm in the zone, and then suddenly it's, okay, I've got a month to finish making it. Go into a gallery and start thinking, right, pressures on.
Yeah, this isn't as much fun as it was last month.
This is definitely not relaxing anymore. I think travel, I really enjoy going to see other countries and other cultures and food. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about the work, the people you've collaborated with.
Mm.
If there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Group show? Past and present. I love Conrad Shawcross. Absolutely love his sculptures. Everywhere in London I seem to go, there's kind of a Conrad Shawcross sculpture. It's so aesthetic, the balance, the form. Fantastic. Rod McIntosh.
He's pretty cool, isn't he?
Yeah. And he's just such a nice bloke. I feel like our artist careers have almost followed each other as well. Like, if I'm doing the London, you know, if I'm on a stand at the London Art Fair, his work is on the same wall, and we just look at each other going, oh, this is amazing. And then, yeah, with the other art fair, we've become really close friends, and our work complements one another quite well. I'd have to go for my mum as well, Jo Beattie.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
We've kind of always wanted to do kind of a joint exhibition. Mum does textiles, like figurative textiles, and she's now working with resin. So I feel like the works also complement each other. So a BT show.
What would the title of that exhibition be?
Son and Daughter, the BT show. At home with the BTs. Yeah, and then I think, you know, see, big names. Some people absolutely hate Kors, but I really like his work and the way he kind of plays with scale. Yeah. From the kind of small toys to the really large ones that I've seen in New York, Hearst, and, you know, your classic Brit yeah. Hearst, Tracy Emin, and yeah, it's probably mentioned too many there. It's turned into a...
There's always room for more. You can throw Hearst and Kors in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. Hope they get on with each other.
I was going to say, what do you think you'd like to be if you wasn't an artist?
That's a good question. Well, so I co-founded an artist studio, which is where I am now, Artist Type Studios in Tottenham. So we opened in September 2019. A friend that I met on my MA, Chantel, and I set it up. And, you know, originally we set it up because we couldn't find an artist studio that we liked ourselves. You know, there was a call center upstairs and I'm downstairs grinding metal, and you just think it's not going to work. Yeah. You know, you don't know your neighbors. So we set up this space in Edmonton. And what I've learned from that is, you know, I'm 10 years into my career. There are people here that are 40 years into their career, but there are also people here that are a year, 6 months into their career. And that passing of knowledge, ideas, contacts has been something that I didn't expect, but I've really enjoyed. So I guess teaching would be an obvious path to go down, but I look at my five-year-old niece who will pick up a pencil and will just scribble with no care in the world about whether it's good or whether it's bad, or it is just for the joy of play and creativity. And something happens as we get older where we become worried. You know, I have the same thing. I open a piece of paper and think, this is it. You know, this is, well, I'm an artist, so I must be able to do a masterpiece on this. And you think, oh, I can't start. You know, you have that anxiety. And I just think to run kind of workshops for adults, whether it's education or whether it's just for the joy of being creative, would be really cool. So, yeah, perfect. I guess teaching of some sort.
And what's the studios that you've created? What's the name again?
Artist Hive Studios. Just in Edmonton. So our nearest, we're right next to the Tottenham Stadium. You'll have to come and visit, Gary.
And is it just sculptors in there?
No, I'm the only sculptor, actually. We've got a full range. We've got printmakers, painters, and typography artists. And that's what's been really special as well, to have that, you know, throughout lockdown as well, when we've been here. That crossover of mediums. So suddenly, you know, I can see how I'm picking up things from another artist that's a painter, completely different discipline, but they've just come in and looked at your work and gone, why don't you just do this? And you think, oh, that's what I've been missing since being in higher education. You know, when you're at uni, you've got a lecturer or you've got your mates going, just do this or just do that. And then you're out of that for 10 years and you're looking around going, I don't know whether what I'm doing is any good or not, and just to have almost that critique, friends and people that you trust coming in and going, oh, that looks good, or, you know, that's not working. That's been really good. It's a great community.
Well, that was a higher point of what we was talking about earlier, possibly before we even started recording, was me doing these podcasts in the studio. Because yeah. I would look at your work, for instance, and then put myself in your shoes and go, oh, if I was you, I would do this. Or if I was doing this work, this might work, this might work. And then it sort of, you know, I mention this quite often, but the artist is on a sort of train track, if you like. And every now and then you come to a junction, you make a little decision and keep going on your destination. But every now and then it's nice to sort of stop and just make a little detour, just even mentally, to have a little look to see what is around.
It's so true. And I mean, for me, you kind of, you're on that train track, and then I kind of introduce neon or LED to my work, and suddenly it's taken a bit of a curve. You're not on that straight line. But yeah, it's really good to have, you know, people around you, and me and my mum also kind of look at each other's work and critique it when we can. And I think that is important, to kind of stop and go, okay, I've been doing this. And, you know, with the lockdown, it forced everyone to kind of go, that's it. I felt like I was running from commission to art fair to commission to another art fair to a group show or a solo exhibition. And as soon as COVID came in, it was like, right, stop, sit down. What on earth have you been doing for 10 years? And you kind of look at everything and go, okay, this is the direction I'd like to set off again now. Let's see what happens in another 10 years.
So it is good to sit down, take a break, reflect. And it is that little bit of, I know it was forced upon everyone, but giving yourself that little bit of time to stop, think, reboot, if you like, you know, and just assess what you've got going on around you.
Yeah, and I think by doing that, you know, you see a lot of people that have picked up new skills in lockdown as well. You know, through the drawings, I released prints, and that's something that I would never have done. I wouldn't have had, you know, I wouldn't have given myself time to do these drawings to then release prints, but it's added to my portfolio. So by stopping and just reassessing and rebooting, like you say, it kind of allows you to go, okay, right, now I'll try a little bit of this, or I'll bring in a little bit of that. Like, that's worked really well with the past sculpture. Why? And I've been meaning to do something with that. And even in the studio here, you know, I'd have works in progress that have been sitting here for like 2 years, and you've got the idea and you'll go, oh yeah, I'll finish that one day. And oh no, I won't, I've got an art fair next month. So yeah, it's been quite good to kind of, stop and think for a little bit.
But it is nice to discover and rediscover your own work. Like you were saying, that you've had a piece sitting on the side for 2 years. I think that's absolutely fine, because when you start that, you've got one mindset. 2 years down the line, your mind and your direction has moved on quite a bit. And that piece of artwork will take on a different shape and meaning from what you intended it to when you started it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had one a couple of weeks ago that was almost it was one continuous copper pipe, and it had formed a globe, and I just looked at it and thought, I'm not pleased with that anymore. It hadn't been painted or anything. So I just put my hand on the inside and stretched it out into and completely destroyed it. It led to absolutely nothing, you know, but just that motion of stretching the sculpture has then led on to other ideas for future sculptures. So it might be, you know, one piece of metal that has now been gone into scrap metal, but it will be recycled, and the ideas that it will lead to might lead to a piece where I can go, okay, that was really interesting, I should try that next time.
Exhibitions, what have you got coming up?
So I'm frantically working towards Start Art Fair at the Saatchi Gallery, which is in a month. It's from the 13th to the 17th of October. So, I'm going to be showing all new sculptures. It's nice. The first art fair that I'm doing myself since I did the other art fair in November 2019 in Brooklyn. So it's been a long time coming. And obviously I wanted to make sure that I mean, the last time I showed in London was March 2019. You know, I wanted to make sure that my comeback was big. You know, I wanted to make sure I'm not wheeling out sculptures from 3 years ago and going, oh, these haven't sold yet. Let's see if these go. So, I'm making 19 miniatures and then lots of new light sculptures, which I'm really excited to show people. All of these ideas have kind of been percolating in lockdown. And again, it's that the love knot idea will feature heavily in one piece. And there's another piece that I'm working on at the moment, and it's like it's warped almost. So it's a piece of stainless steel where the edges have been warped. And I guess it's looking at that, you know, how time has just completely warped in the last 2 years.
along with all of us.
Exactly.
We've all walked a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah, what month it is or what day it is. But it's been fantastic to actually have something to work towards as well. You know, it's been so long in the making that finally we can actually go out and see some culture and take part in some art fairs, which is great.
I mean, you said you're taking, what was it, 19 miniatures?
Yeah.
How big are the miniatures? How miniature is miniature?
They range from about 10 centimetres in height to 30 centimetres in height. So they completely change. And then obviously they're on plinths and they've got different finishes. So some have been plated with antique bronze and they're the smallest ones. And then others have been gold leafed and coloured aluminium. So yeah, a kind of between 10 and 30 centimetres, more kind of accessible mantelpieces.
Well, they don't lose much of their narrative from the miniature to the larger sculptures, do they?
Yeah, and that's what I've really enjoyed, going back to revisit the miniatures. So during the first lockdown, the artist support pledge, I was selling quite a few miniatures on Instagram. And these were miniatures that I'd made 3 years ago when no one was really bothered about small sculptures. But suddenly those maquettes, the miniatures, they were affordable and people were really excited about them in the first lockdown. And I've continued to sell them, which has been really good. And the fact that they keep their signature style, as soon as I make one, I look at it and go, wow, how cool would it be to make that 3 meters, 5 meters?
And what is your dream? Again, you've had your dream when you was a student and had a go at that. What is it? What would it be now?
Public art, really. I'd love to kind of make obviously the scale would be great, but just to have a piece in the public realm that people can go and see. And I'm part of the Royal Society of Sculptors, and they really help kind of nurture young sculptors and give them opportunities to apply for commissions like that. Hopefully in the next kind of few years, I'll pick up a commission where, we can go and see a 5 meter piece somewhere.
That sounds pretty cool. So when is the start art fair?
From the 13th to the 17th of October at the Saatchi Gallery. And then the week after that, I'm at the Affordable Art Fair with the miniatures, and that's with May's Gallery.
Nice.
October, isn't it? So, the whole art world's looking at London.
And for the people who can't get to London for the art fairs, where can anyone see your work online, be it social media or old website?
So my website's markbeattie.co.uk and my Instagram tag is markbeattie_art.
Perfect. Well, Mark, that's all my questions asked.
Oh, perfect.
Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank you, mate. Great to catch up. Yeah, cheers, mate.
All right then, mate. All the best. See you later.
Good afternoon. Take care.
Ta-da.
Bye.
There you are, Mark Beattie. Absolutely great stuff. And as he mentioned there, he's showing at the Star Art Fair, which is at Saatchi Gallery in London, from the 13th to the 17th of October. He'll have links on his Instagram profile page, and you'll find a link to his website in these show notes. Well, that's about it for this week's episode. So, until next week, toodle pip. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.